Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Time to get the scoop on some old football history with Tim Brown of FootballArchaeology.com, as Tim is going to talk to us about some of the field attributes that we take for granted today, but they were big innovations at the time. Tim's up next with this history.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pig Pen, your portal to positive football history. This is time for another great football archaeological dig with our friend Timothy Brown of Football Archaeology. Tim Brown, welcome back to the Pig Pen.
Hey, thank you, Darren. Looking forward to chatting again. Football season is underway, so at least college.
College so far. When we are recording this, it's the day after Labor Day, and we had some really great college football over the weekend that I really enjoyed. Probably about just about every game that I watched.
Yeah, likewise. I saw three or four or five that I thought were a lot of fun.
Yeah, so. Especially that LSU FSU finish. Well, yeah. I don't know if I can remember one being like that. So such excitement. I didn't have anything vested in either team, but it was thrilling nonetheless.
Yeah, that was a crazy finish.
How that guy got out of bounds at the 2-yard line with 1 second left, I don't know, but that was an amazing play just all in itself. So many great things in that last 2 minutes, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Today we want to talk about one of your recent tidbits that you have, and Tim puts out these tidbits every evening on some form of football, which are really nice little reads to do, and they spark some interest and some thought, and that's why we enjoy doing this every Tuesday. And you had one back on July 30th called "Loudspeakers and Lights" in your tidbit section, and I'd like to see if maybe we could chat about that a little bit.
Yeah, so again, this is one that, you know, some of these tidbits, I think, you know, it's easy to talk about without the pictures. This one probably would help, you know, for somebody to see the images. But, you know, it's not that difficult to explain. But, you know, I think the key thing about that one was it was just trying to point out that the in-game experience or the in-stadium atmosphere was just a lot different back in the day, you know. And there's things that we just assume, you know, they've always been there in our experience and in our parents' experience, but they weren't there, you know, 100 years ago. And then, you know, it took a little while to get them to kind of modern standards. And so, you know, it's really about the loudspeaker systems and the lighting system. So just, you know, if you think about a loudspeaker system, you know, without the ability of the announcer to use a loudspeaker, they literally, in some stadiums, like I know Penn did this, but they had guys with megaphones, you know, and they'd shout to, you know, they turn to the left and announce something, turn to the right and announce something. But obviously, if it was a fairly loud stadium, they weren't heard. And so, you know, without loudspeaker systems, you also, a lot of things that we just take for granted today couldn't be there. So you didn't have an announcer telling you what down and distance it was or who ran the ball or what the penalty was. You didn't have music, you know, you didn't have pregame introductions of the players, right? I mean, none of that ceremony occurred. Another thing you didn't have pregame was you didn't have a national anthem. You know, that really got started before games at Comiskey before the 1917 World Series, at Comiskey happened to be the the first place where loudspeakers were put in at a major league park. So I'm not sure if the loudspeakers played a role or not, but anyways, that's when they started playing the national anthem. And, you know, so you only had, until after World War II, you only had the national anthem played at games or before games when there was a band there. You know, you couldn't, you know, there wasn't a way to play a recording, you know, and have it loud enough. So you had to have a band, and that typically only occurred for special occasions. And then, you know, then once you had pre-recorded music and loudspeaker systems, and they'd play, you know, they started playing the national anthem before games, you know, baseball, basketball, football, everything. But that's a pre-world or post-World War II thing. So then once they did have, once they started installing these loudspeakers, oftentimes they had to, they still weren't as loud as what we know today, or, and, you know, lower quality. So they would, oftentimes they planted the loudspeaker poles like in front of the stands and then faced back at the stands. But as a result, you know, they'd be like on the track if it was a stadium with the track around it. And then they, you know, if you sat behind, you know, if you had a lower seat down near one of those poles, that pole got in your way. You know, it's, you had kind of an obstructed view. And the same thing with the lights, the bulbs themselves just weren't as powerful, and you need a lot more of the lights. So then you, you know, same kind of thing, the poles for the lights kind of, you know, obstructed the view. And it wasn't horrible. It wasn't like, you know, having a big pillar in front of your seat, like I've experienced at Fenway and at the old Tiger Stadium, but, you know, still it's a thing we just, you know, don't even think about anymore. Now, you know, the other thing I think about the lights is that, you know, I've written some things about this recently too, but for night games, the lighting was poor. So they used to use white and yellow footballs just so the people, you know, so the players could see them. And then in the early 50s, they started putting stripes on the balls for, you know, visual purposes. So, you know, even things like that, you know, just the sheer ability to see the ball was problematic back in the day. And they, you know, they didn't pass the ball as much, so it wasn't as big an issue as it would be today, but still, you know, it's just lights and sound. Crazy how that affects the way that you perceive a game.
Yeah, you think about the construction of the stadiums. I mean, they were a little bit more open air than many of our stadiums today. You know, we have these giant, you know, monolith stadiums that are, you know, going, you know, 6-7 decks up and, you know, with roofs on them and everything. So the sound can stay into those, and it's more, you know, cement now and plastic, where the sound can bounce around. I mean, think about back then, they had, you know, probably wooden bleachers and, you know, a lot of earthen type structures around, you know, so it dampened the sound a little bit too. So made it harder to hear, even when they had the amplified speakers on the poles.
And, you know, a lot of major college stadiums were not bowls. You know, they'd have a big set of stands on the home side and then a lesser set of stands on the away side. And then both ends would be open. You know, I mean, that was very, very common. So, and even like today, you know, Michigan, as big a stadium as that is, it's not that loud. It's just, you know, it's just as metal, and the sound dissipates, you know. So, yeah, as we built up and had multiple levels and have multiple levels in the stadium, it changes the sound quality.
Well, very interesting. Once again, Tim, why don't you go ahead and give us so listeners can get a hold of where your tidbits come out, so they can can subscribe or find them, and also your social media where you post them.
Yeah, so I really just I'm putting them just in two places now. It's footballarchaeology.com. So you just search for that on Google, and you should be able to find that without any problem. And then, you know, basically, if you subscribe to Football Archaeology, you will, every time I post, you will get an email. So it's effectively, you know, it's on Substack, so it's effectively a newsletter, you know, sort of situation. Alternatively, just, you know, follow me on on Twitter. And again, you can look for football archaeology. And, you know, there's two football archaeologies. I'm the one in the States. The other one's over in the UK. So just find me.
The one that doesn't have the soccer ball on it, right?
That's right. Mine's got an old helmet inside of a greenish kind of circle.
And folks, if you're driving or aren't near a pencil or something, write this down. We have it in the show notes of this very podcast. You can follow it there. We're on our post that we have on Pigskin Dispatch as well. Get you right to Tim's site and get those tidbits right away. Tim Brown, thank you once again for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Very good. We'll see you then. Thanks.
We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's fourth and long. We're going to have to punt the ball and get on out of here, but we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hey there, football fans, this is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.